you have poor sleep, you know, you downregulates your leptin, which tells your body you're full, and it upregulates your ghrelin, which tells your body you're hungry. And then it also messes up, as we talked about before, your blood sugar balance and your insulin. So I always find myself like hungry earlier than usual, because usually I can go like 12, 14 hours without eating. If I have bad sleep, I wake up, I'm like hungry. Brain fog, lack of concentration, lack of motivation, you know, all of my good intentions of being productive on a new project or, you know, working out, it, you know, it just really goes out the window.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anisha, and I'm your host for the Wellness Plus podcast. In today's episode, I would love to introduce you to the show, Amanda Shoko. She's a nutritional therapy practitioner, sleep coach, and author of the book, Relax, Sleep, Thrive. Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Anisha. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here.
So let's get into this. Tell us about you and your journey with insomnia and how it led you to becoming a sleep coach.
Sure. So my journey with insomnia goes way back. Probably most of my adult life, I had some type of sleep issue, but it was kind of on and off. And, you know, I would deal with it with kind of the over-the-counter NyQuil or sleepy time tea or maybe a glass of wine. And it was not very chronic at that time. So those things were temporary and fine. I became a nutritional therapy practitioner back in 2017. And this was due to some other health issues that I was having with inflammatory bowel disease and autoimmune conditions. And I went down a really holistic path to try to work all of that out, which is really a whole other podcast in itself. And so I decided to go back to school and really, you know, become official and get some credentials behind me so I could help other people, you know, overcome some of their issues as well. So I went to the Nutritional Therapy Association and became a certified nutritional therapy practitioner and really learned the basics of nutrition and how nutrition impacts the body, as well as sleep and stress and all of those things together. And when I left the Nutritional Therapy Association, I continued my education to really dig into gut health protocols and autoimmune protocols. And I was working with clients that were dealing with those issues, but always in the background was sleep issues with all of them. Even though they didn't come to me initially with those problems, the majority of them had sleep issues. So I was always dabbling with different types of remedies and things to try to help them overcome it. But it wasn't until about 2020, really like during the pandemic, where my insomnia became super chronic. And I was not sleeping at all. I was staring at the ceiling all night. I was just walking around like a zombie. And it just became completely out of control. And it's then that I knew I really had to get serious and dig deep. And just the whack-a-mole with different remedies was not going to be the answer.
What did you think was the underlying reason for the insomnia?
Probably stress at that point in time was what I was thinking. I was just like, you know, I'm having stress. Everyone's having stress. You know, there's, you know, chaos going on in the world. And you heard, you know, about so many other people that were like dealing with the same thing. So I really chalked it up to that. But I really didn't know how to deal with it. So I decided to really dig into sleep research. And, you know, in that time, you know, really also experimenting on myself to try to connect the dots to figure out what was going on with me. So it took me about a year of doing this, well, doing the research while completely sleep deprived, right? So that was a challenge in itself. And I just found out there were like things, the day-to-day things that I was doing were making an impact. Obviously, the stress and really figuring out all types of ways to minimize the stress and, you know, overactive mind chatter and all of those things, blood sugar issues. There were like so many different things that I was pinpointing that I put together really comprehensive methodology to really guide myself through all of that. And then out of that came me really deciding to focus on sleep, you know, as a sleep coach. You're still helping people with other nutritional, gut, autoimmune issues, blood sugar issues, which I'm trained to do, which all play into it. You know, it's, you can't really separate all of those things. And, you know, and out of that also came my book.
So when you talk about stress, do you also factor in overthinking, our work schedules, all of those factors into how stress affects our life?
Absolutely. I mean, a good night's sleep begins the minute we wake up. And if we're going through our day with just, you know, running, you know, 1,000 miles an hour on all cylinders, dealing with all the daily stressors in life, it's really going to play havoc on our flight or fight, on our, yeah, and then it all trickles down to sleep. So there's so many different kinds of stress that you may encounter, you know, in your life day. So that was a big part of really figuring out, you know, what are the strategies to really focus on, you know, calming that overactive mind, you know, reframing negative thoughts, you know, using meditation and breath work and journaling and so many different things to experiment with.
Right. I definitely agree with that. What are some typical sleep stealing traps that you encountered during your struggle with insomnia?
Sure. So, you know, there's so many things just in our daily habits and routines that could be impacting our sleep. And it sometimes is just a matter of like tweaking the timing of things. So, you know, an obvious one is caffeine. You know, I try to give up my coffee. It's not going to happen, but I do realize that I need a caffeine curfew. And, you know, caffeine has a half-life of 8 to 10 hours, meaning, you know, 8 to 10 hours later, you know, it could still be in your system. People metabolize caffeine differently. But what caffeine really does is it, you know, also works on your stress response between cortisol and adrenaline. So it kind of makes you wired to begin with. But then it also does something else. There's a chemical that builds up in our brain throughout the day called adenosine. And it's also known as sleep pressure. So this chemical builds up through the day where you begin to get more and more sleepy as you reach bedtime. And caffeine actually connects to those receptors in our brain and blocks the adenosine. So it also keeps us from being tired. So caffeine plays many roles. It's not just in coffee, obviously. It's in chocolate and energy drinks, and even decaf has a little bit of caffeine in it. So really monitoring that is important. Meal timing as well, you know, making sure that you're finishing your dinner 2 to 3 hours before to give yourself time to digest. Another thing that people don't really connect is medications and supplements. They can often cause insomnia. So people that are on any type of blood pressure medications, cholesterol, ADHD, some antidepressants, there's a bunch of medications that it might not say it on the bottle and your doctor might not warn you that are known to cause insomnia. So in that case, it's really like investigating, like, what are the medications I'm on? You know, what time of day am I taking them, and working with your physician to see about adjusting the timing of that. And then there are also supplements that can keep you awake. Exercise as well. Exercising too close to bed raises your cortisol, can raise your body temperature.
Yes. Yeah. It was like probably last week I did a very high intensity workout, probably about 5 p.m., 6 p.m. There's no way I was able to sleep. I thought it was going to do the opposite and help me fall asleep.
Yeah. Well, because it's a good stressor to your body most of the time, but it does raise your cortisol in your body, your stress hormones. And then it also raises your body temperature. And it's really important for your body temperature to lower to get a good night's sleep. So if you're revved up from a workout, and your body temperature is up, is just going to make it that much harder to fall asleep. So, you know, as early as you possibly can with your schedule. I mean, exercise at night, if you're doing like yoga or taking a walk, I mean, those things are fine, but
anything high intensity, don't do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
How does nutrition affect our sleep?
So there's so many things about nutrition that can impact our sleep and about our sleep that could impact our nutrition choices as well. So it's really a two-way street. So you, first of all, you know, you really want to make sure that you're having a, you know, a really nutrient-dense, whole food, balanced diet, that you're getting all of your micronutrients. And because your micronutrients, like magnesium, vitamin D, you know, there's so many different nutrients that really help with your overall health, but also with your neurotransmitters, your hormones, everything else. So making sure you're having a nutrient-dense diet is super important. You want to also be making sure you're balancing those macronutrients and getting, you know, a good balance of quality proteins to get all of your amino acids, which are also going to impact your hormones and your neurotransmitters. So quality protein, healthy fats are really important as well. And really thinking about staying away as much as possible from processed foods, because processed foods, first of all, they lack the nutrients, and even the nutrients that they put back in are synthetic, and sometimes our body does not absorb them because it doesn't recognize them. And there's all types of you know, additives that could cause inflammation in our bodies, that could cause food sensitivities, which cause stress and inflammation in our bodies as well. So, you know, really thinking through, you know, that balance, you know, we, as I said before, you can't really separate sleep from movement, from nutrition, from stress management. It's all, you know, it all plays together. Another area that nutrition comes in that's super important is in blood sugar management. Because if your blood sugar is out of whack, that's really going to impact your sleep. It's going to cause drops in your blood sugar that will lead to a stress response in your body. You're going to, you know, have cortisol flowing through your body, which is really the antithesis of melatonin, which is the hormone that you want for bed. And also, if you have bad sleep, it messes with your blood sugar as well, and you're more apt to have insulin resistance and cravings and all kinds of things like that. So
it works in a loop.
It does. It really, really does.
Oh, man. So how are you able to determine your own cause of insomnia? How are you able to help yourself navigate through it?
So the first thing I really worked on was just the foundations of good sleep, having a regular bedtime, trying to train my body clock, my circadian rhythm to wind down at the same time every night, wake up at the same time every morning, you know, even on weekends until you get your body used to that. You know, having a wind down routine to really reduce that stress. Making sure my sleep environment was optimized. So, you know, you want a dark environment. The room temperature should be lowered because, again, you want your body temperature to be lowered at night. So, you know, 65, 68 degrees is usually a good temperature. And then just as we were talking about those day-to-day habits, is really tracking your sleep and then tracking those habits against that. So in my book, I have people, you know, people that read it. And when I work with clients, it's like tracking your sleep quality. You know, are you having trouble falling asleep? Are you waking in the middle of the night and you can't get back to sleep? And then really looking at your day and say, you know, when am I eating? When am I finishing my coffee? When am I having that glass of wine that's going to wake me up in the middle of the night, even though it, you know, makes me drowsy at first? Exercise timing, all of that. And I was really able to start connecting the dots and realizing like when I had to put like, you know, curfews on these activities. You know, for instance, you know, I used to really think relaxing with a glass of wine before bed, you know, was a good thing. You hear like red wine, you know, super healthy for you. And at the same time, you know, dark chocolate's really healthy for you. So here I am drinking red wine and eating dark chocolate. So I'm filling myself with sugar, caffeine, and then alcohol, which is going to have a rebound effect in the middle of the night and just pop me out of bed. So I had to really look into adjusting that. And then the stress was huge. You know, really experimenting with all of the different strategies for managing stress and getting into that more relaxed state and trying to, you know, keep my mind from incessant thinking and, you know, relentless mind chatter. You know, there's nothing worse than you wake in the middle of the night and then you just can't shut your brain off, right? And it happens. It happens to the best of us. So really working on those strategies. So it was a really, you know, there wasn't like one thing. It wasn't like, oh, you know, this is the thing. I did find that, you know, sometimes I would forget to take my supplements in the morning, and I would take it with dinner because I'd say, oh, I'm going to eat, you know, I should take these with food. But then those were keeping me up. This, you know, B vitamins cause energy, keeping you awake. Vitamin D, if you have a vitamin D deficiency, that could be a problem for sleep, but it also is known to cause insomnia. So you don't want to take your vitamin D too late. Multivitamins have all kinds of like little mystery, you know, ingredients in there as well. So I had to really experiment with all of those things too.
For every individual too, there's so many factors that can play into it.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, spending time just doing what you do and noticing. So you might notice, you know, wow, you know, a couple of days this week, I met a friend for coffee, you know, at like 2 o'clock. And then I had really bad sleep that night. You know, maybe I really have to start thinking about having decaf or an herbal tea, you know, during those meetings. You know, oh, I noticed that, you know, every Saturday I wake up, you know, with brain fog and everything else. Oh yeah, I went to happy hour last night, you know, and had a couple glasses of wine and, you know, and that impacted it. So, you know, as you said, it's really bio-individual and you have to track it all for a while to start really being able to connect those dots. And then, you know, when you have a suspicion that it's one of those things and you change the timing of it or you replace it with something else, and then you could monitor if your sleep's improved from there.
So how does that work with your clients? It's all about trial and error. So you'd analyze it based on their schedules, what they eat, the supplements they take, and at what time they take it?
Yeah. So all of my clients, and I have this in the book as well, is a baseline sleep assessment. So you take a sleep assessment and it has a bunch of questions on there about your sleep quality, your sleep habits. And then I have a consultation with them to really get a good understanding because I want to meet them where they're at. So if they tell me, you know, I on a regular sleep schedule, I'm doing all the things, you know, the wind down routine and all that, then we'll dig into, okay, let's track everything you're doing and meet once a week and troubleshoot and come up with some, you know, different strategies to address that. If they tell me, you know, I have no sleep schedule, you know, I work, you know, from my bed at night, you know, I scroll, you know, on Instagram, you know, until midnight, you know, then we start looking at like the real obvious things that we're like, okay, let's think about starting new habits, which is hard, right? I mean, if you're in the habit of something, especially if it's something you enjoy doing, or you're like, well, I have to, you know, work at night because this is the only time I have because I, you know, I have all these other things going on. So really trying to come up with the strategies to help them make it a lifestyle that's not going to cause extra stress and anxiety in their life with having to make so many changes.
Do you also think our environment plays a role? So if somebody is working at home and they're in their bed, would that factor in how they sleep based on the environment?
Yes, totally. So one thing I have my clients do is create their sleep sanctuary. So what this includes is, we talked about temperature, right? You want to make sure that, first of all, you want to associate your bed with sleep, because this is how you train your body and your, like, your body clock and your rhythms for sleep. So by, you know, doing this like nightly routine, you get into that rhythm, your body expects you to go to sleep. Then when you get into your room, you want to associate your bed with sleep. So when you get into bed, it won't take you that long to fall asleep. So if you have the television blaring, or you're working on your laptop, or, you know, you're scrolling on your phone, that's all going, that blue light just will downregulate your melatonin. All it does is tell your body it's daytime, time to stay awake, you know. And then you have all the other stimuli on those devices, or checking work emails, you know, that tick you off, that then get your brain going. So that's, you know, you've got to get rid of that. I think, you know, one thing that I do is the one screen I have that I use every night is my Nook, right? I read every night, but I wear blue blocking glasses. So I put on blue blocking glasses about an hour before I go to bed, and that blocks all the blue light. And I honestly feel myself getting sleepy as soon as I put them on, and it really helps your melatonin to kick in, because for your body to, you know, be able to secrete that melatonin, it needs darkness. And, you know, cortisol and melatonin are like yin and yang, you know, antithesis, you know, of each other. So, you know, you don't want things that are raising your cortisol, stressing you out, and having your room as dark as possible, you know, and if that means wearing a sleep mask or blackout curtains, or, you know, for me, even if there's a nightlight in the room, it'll disturb me. I mean, if I go to a hotel or something and there are like night lights, I like unplug them all, you know. And I have one in my bathroom that is like a red orangey light. So then if I go in there, it doesn't really impact it. You know, having comfortable bedding, there's just, you know, so many things with just creating that sleep environment.
Definitely. And I found that having those, you know, those LED strip lights. So what I'll do, I'll create a sanctuary. I'll put those lights on, but very, very low. So it'd be like a nice deep red. I'll put it on and do my meditation an hour before bed. And I find that I knock right out.
Well, you know, you've gotten your body into that rhythm, right? Of doing that on a consistent basis. And, you know, when you're meditating, you're going into, you know, that more relaxed parasympathetic state. And, you know, meditation, I used to meditate and be like, why, you know, why am I doing this? I don't feel like it's doing anything, but I stuck with it. And what I found out, how it really helps me with sleep, is it helps me not go down rabbit holes with my thoughts, because you're training, right? You're training your mind to let the thoughts pass and not get caught up in it. And I've definitely found out, so if I wake in the middle of the night, say I need to go to the restroom, all of a sudden it used to be like my mind would just like start. Ooh, yeah, no turning back. But, you know, through consistent meditation, now I'm able to just be, you know, focused on my breath, or, you know, one thing, I do a little mantra as I'm going to, like if I get up to the restroom at night, and all I do is like, no thoughts. No thoughts, no thoughts. And it works. It really works.
It does. I found that it completely stops a rabbit hole.
That's a hard thing, like waking up in the middle of the night and all of a sudden your mind turns on. So, you know, there's meditation, so many different meditations you could do, but it's really, again, trying to refocus on something else, whether that's like a body scan meditation where you come out of your head, you know, and more into your body. It's, you know, mindfulness meditation where you're focusing on your breath, or even doing breath work, you know, like box breathing, all, you know, there's so many different types of breath work that you could do. So those are things that definitely help with that.
What do you believe are the consequences of bad sleep overall on our health, the way we live our lives? What is your opinion on it?
Yeah. So the day after a bad sleep, I think, you know, first of all, you're going to find yourself being more hungry because it messes with your hunger hormones. So if you have poor sleep, you know, you down-regulates your leptin, which tells your body you're full, and it up-regulates your ghrelin, which tells your body you're hungry. And then it also messes up, as we talked about before, your blood sugar balance and your insulin. So I always find myself like hungry earlier than usual, because usually I can go like 12, 14 hours without eating. If I have bad sleep, I wake up, I'm like hungry, or hangry probably would be like a more apropos word. Brain fog, lack of concentration, lack of motivation, you know, all of my good intentions of being productive on a new project or, you know, working out, it just really goes out the window. It really does. You know, moodiness, irritability, you know, it gets to the point where I'm just like happy to get through the day, let alone do anything, you know, health-wise, productivity-wise, anything like this. Memory issues, all of those things. When it becomes chronic, those things can really manifest into depression, your chronic anxiety, you know, even chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes, and like down the line, neurological conditions like dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. You know, you really need sleep. And you need sleep. I mean, there, you know, you have to go through all the stages of sleep. They're very important to every aspect, you know, of your physiology. You know, in deep sleep, you're repairing, you know, your muscles, your tissues. Your brain is, you know, washing out all the toxins and the proteins it doesn't need. You know, in your REM sleep, you really, to me, that's like your brain's, you know, spa time, where you're consolidating memories, and creativity is important. If you don't have good REM sleep, your creativity goes out the window. So having that sleep, steady sleep, is super important to your day-to-day and then your long-term health.
What are the stages that you go into for a good night's rest?
Yeah. So typical stages in the beginning, you know, stage 1 and 2 is, you know, you're starting to get tired, and your body's relaxing. You're starting to like kind of detach from your environment. You know, in stage 2, that's when your breathing slows down, your body temperature comes down, your muscles start to relax. You might like find yourself like, did you ever like, as you're falling asleep, you find yourself twitching?
What causes that?
It's just your body going into that next cycle, I guess. It's something to do with the muscles relaxing. The first part of the night is when most of your deep sleep happens. And again, that is, you know, that's really important for regeneration of tissues and muscle building, you know, again, flushing the toxins out of your brain. And, you know, it's more like that physical rejuvenation that you need to go through when you're sleeping. Because like when you work out, when you do like all these things, sleep is when the benefits come from that. Because all day long, you're breaking your body down, right? And that's what muscle building is, right? You're breaking it down and then it has to heal and build back up. That all happens in your sleep and usually during deep sleep. Also, you know, in that time, it's your hormones are regulating. So whether that's your sex hormones, your hunger hormones, as we talked about before, you know, all of your hormones are processing the way they should. Your liver is detoxifying. You know, all of your body systems are on this, you know, circadian clock. And a lot of that happens during our sleep. You know, during REM sleep, that's, you know, towards the like later stage of sleep. You go through all the cycles. Each cycle is about 90 minutes, but the bulk of your deep sleep's in the beginning and the bulk of your REM sleep is towards the middle end of the night. And that's when you start having your dreams, and that's when you have, you know, consolidated memories.
Nightmares, maybe?
Yes. Yeah, you could definitely have those. I've had those for sure. And then there's light, you know, there's periods of light sleep intertwined in between that, which is also important. So it's not only important to get, you know, 6 to 8 hours, depending on what works for you, of sleep, but the quality of your sleep matters as well to really, be working on all your cylinders.
What would you consider good quality sleep? Would you say it's more external factors or internal factors or a combination?
Everyone's different. The sleep bandits, like the everyday habits that we do. But then there could also be medical conditions going on. It could be pain. Maybe you're having, you injured yourself, or you have, something going on that's causing pain in your body. Again, we talked about blood sugar, hormonal fluctuations. So, going through all of those, different stages of life, whether it's, perimenopause, menopause, puberty, pregnancy, post-pregnancy. I mean, all those hormonal fluctuations can mess your sleep up. Food sensitivities could be a problem. Histamine intolerance could be a problem. Sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, diabetes. I mean, there's so many things, and that's why, really monitoring your sleep, tracking it over time, getting the foundations down, seeing what the day-to-day habits are, the easy, low-hanging fruit. And if that's not working, that's when it's time to maybe work with a healthcare practitioner to do some testing and find out, is there something deeper going on? And then the whole, we already talked about the whole stress thing, right? I mean, there's, it really depends, on what you're going through in your life. I mean, there's just everyday annoyances that are stressors. There's stressors that just completely come from the stories we make up in our heads. Everything always seems worse at night than it really is. So really dealing with that. If you're dealing with anxiety and depression, maybe going to a therapist and working on that as well. So there's a lot of things that we could do on our own. Mattress is important, your bedding, and there are other, I always talk about the sleep toolbox of all these other things. I talked about the blue blocking glasses. Part of, getting your body back on track, like your circadian rhythms on track. And, our bodies are really meant to go to sleep at sundown and wake up with sunrise, but that's just not the way, we roll these days. It's not like a Little House on the Prairie anymore. So, using those blue blocking glasses, dimming the lights, doing everything you can, but then in the morning, getting out in the sun as early as possible, getting, that daylight into your eyes. And that really helps to set your rhythm. If you can't do that, investing in a light box. I have a Philips Go light because I live in Michigan and I get up at 5 a.m. There is no sun.
Right.
Happening any time of year. So I use a light box in the morning, like when I'm, either having my coffee or getting ready for the day. Weighted blankets can be really soothing to people. Just having, that weight is comforting. All different meditation apps, using white noise, binaural beats. There's all different tools that you could use, as you're really trying to troubleshoot how to, improve your sleep, get over your insomnia, and start getting really, quality sleep.
Sometimes, when people want to sleep in, so for instance, if we work a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, but then we sleep in on the weekends, how much do those 2 days affect our normal sleep schedule?
It could really impact your sleep schedule. When I work with clients, and also in my book, I have a sleep commitment statement that you're kind of taking the sleep oath that you're going to give 30 days of really focusing on your sleep, where your social life might take a hit, your, Thursday, Friday night Netflix binges might have to, go on pause for a while. But you're really saying, if you're really having sleep issues, something you have to make the sacrifice and to get on a consistent sleep schedule, that includes the weekends, at least for 30 days. Now, for me, alcohol ruins my sleep. I have an Aura ring and I can see like my sleep stages and my sleep cycles, especially my deep sleep takes a hit if I drink alcohol. But Saturday night, my husband and I go out and, you know, have a glass of wine. I'm not going to give that up. So I know that my sleep is probably not going to be ideal. And that, you know, Sunday I might drag a little bit, but that's the sacrifice that I'm willing to make because I've already made that connection. Sleep schedule, you need to get on it. And then you could kind of play around with it once your body gets into that rhythm.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know how much 2 days would affect the overall week for the week ahead.
It does. Yeah. Our bodies like to be in a rhythm. They like consistency. You know, it's, you know, your sleep time, your meal timing, your exercise timing, all the things that we talked about. If you really want to optimize your health, getting on a consistent schedule with those things is super important. But then, you know, life comes into it and it's just the choices that you make, right? And it's also the stage of life that you're in. I mean, when I was in my 20s, it didn't matter. I mean, I recovered very well. You know, I was very resilient. And I think, you know, most people in their 20s might be a little bit more resilient to that fluctuation of sleep. But, you know, as you get, and then, you know, once you start having a family, then you have children who get up in the middle of the night and, you know, things that are really just, you know, that chapter that you're going through in life that you're just going to have to work around and find coping mechanisms for. And then you're going through all the hormone stuff, which is whacking you out. So it's, you know, the most consistency that you could have, better, you know, for your sleep, but it depends really where you are in your life as to how realistic that is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. What are your opinions on sleep medications?
So my go-to is always not resorting to sleep medications. I think, you know, there are a lot of people that just say, I don't want to change anything. I'm just going on my life and I'm just going to, you know, take sleep meds. In some circumstances, for short term, I think they can be helpful as long as you're working with your physician and it doesn't become a lifelong habit because there are a lot of side effects to sleep medications. They can be, you can become dependent on them. You know, they become a crutch after a while. And it, you know, there are studies that show that you don't even go into your proper sleep cycles when you're on them. So you're not even necessarily getting quality sleep, you know, passing out is not the same as, you know, going through all your sleep cycles. But, you know, you really, that's between you and your doctor to decide if that, depending on what's going on in your life, if that's a, you know, a solution for you.
What are your approaches to focus more on holistic ideas rather than conventional methods?
So I think that, you know, really looking at, you know, how supplements might be able to help with sleep. So, you know, magnesium is really huge for sleep. So trying to take magnesium glycinate is known to be best for sleep. There's many, many different types of magnesium. Magnesium, you know, is over like 300-400, you know, functions in our bodies that depends on magnesium, and there's different forms. But when it comes to sleep, glycinate's usually the go-to for that. So, you know, taking, you know, about 450 milligrams a day, you know, closer to bed if you can, could be very helpful. L-theanine also is known to help with sleep. Valerian root. There are some teas.
What are some teas that you recommend?
I've tried so many. I can't even tell you off the top of my head. I tend to like to get my teas in like a nutrition store. You know, a health food store, because they usually have brands that have more of the things that are supposed to be in there and less of the things that are fillers that shouldn't be in there. So like Yogi Tea is a really good brand and they have different teas for sleep. But again, if you're just doing basic sleep, you know, chamomile tea would be, you know, something good. There's, you know, all types of like sleepy time teas. You know, read the ingredients on the box, see what else is in there besides the tea, and just like experiment. You know, the one drawback I saw with some of those teas is that I'd have to get up and go to the bathroom at night.
Yeah, that's a downside.
So that was something that didn't work for me. Essential oils as well, aromatherapy, you know, lavender, chamomile, you know, those are things that can really help with sleep as well if you're, you know, trying to avoid medications. Some people have a lot of success with CBD. Others do not. So that's a real, you know, N equals one experiment.
Would you recommend somebody to check their vitals when they're first starting out?
So if you have high blood pressure, that could be an issue for your sleep. We talked about blood sugar. You know, monitoring, if you feel like you have blood sugar issues, you're monitoring your blood sugar, maybe taking your, you know, your fasting blood sugar, getting a glucose monitor, you know, or working with a practitioner or your doctor to monitor that, because, you know, that's your body talking to you. I think that if after 30 days of trying all kind of the techniques that we talked about and nothing's working, or if you're having other symptoms that you're finding to be out of the ordinary for you, I'd say that's when you definitely want to go to a doctor, get a checkup, get some tests run, and, you know, see if there's some underlying condition going on. You know, if you have something like sleep apnea, that is something that you really want to get checked. So sleep apnea happens when you have periods where you stop breathing through the night. And there are different things that cause sleep apnea. Sometimes it could be, you know, if you're a little overweight and you're sleeping on your back, could cause it. Alcohol consumption can cause that, because alcohol also relaxes your throat muscles. So it causes snoring and, you know, for you to stop breathing. And when you have sleep apnea, when you stop breathing, your heart stops for a split second as well. So it's super dangerous. So if you have a partner that's telling you you're snoring a lot, or they're hearing you like gasp for air in the middle of the night, you might go to a specialist and get like a sleep study done to find out if that's an issue that you have, because that's something you need to work with a doctor on.
I have friends who correlate snoring to having a good night's rest. So maybe that is not the case.
I don't know if their partner does, if they're listening to that. But, you know, I think that, how do you feel the next day? Okay, that's test number one. If you have brain fog, if you're talking about like all the symptoms we talked about before, where your hunger is off, your brain fog, motivation, your energy's low, motivation's low, or you start having some chronic issues, well, then maybe you're not getting good sleep. If you feel great, okay. Another thing is to get some type of a sleep tracker. So I mentioned earlier, you know, I have an Oura Ring, so it monitors my sleep at night and it tells me, you know, what my heart rate variability is, what if my temperature is up or down, you know, what all the different sleep stages that I've gone through, the quality of my sleep. So you might think you're getting a good night's sleep because you slept through the night, but you might not be going through the proper sleep architecture of getting those sleep stages where you're getting that quality rest and rejuvenation.
Is there a certain rate that you want to try to keep your heart rate?
It's really individual. So I know with the Oura Ring, you have a baseline. So it kind of gets to know you as an individual, and it'll tell you, like, here's your normal, like, baseline heart rate. Oh, last night your heart rate increased. It, you know, did you eat too close to bed? It'll give you like little suggestions. For me, the things that increase my heart rate are food sensitivities. If I eat something that I'm sensitive to, I know that I feel my heart racing, and, you know, that's a clue for me. That'll raise my heart rate. But it'll also tell you, oh, your heart rate lowered. And, you know, it's just like, what would be causing those things? So there's not, you know, one size fits all, I don't think. You know, my resting heart rate when I sleep is normally around 49, 50. But there are sometimes I see it and it's like it shot up, you know, to like 80 or 90. And oh, wow, look, at the same time I woke up. So that to me says, well, you know what? That could have been a blood sugar spike, or my blood sugar dropped. Then my cortisol came to try to get, you know, sugar back into my system. And that stress and adrenaline response, because if your blood sugar drops, it's an emergency to your body, will raise your heart rate, will raise, you know, you up out of bed. So it's like, really, it's becoming a sleep detective. You know, you really have to think of it that way. It's like you're connecting the dots, and you know, if you're really, you know, serious about fixing your sleep, it's got to become your number one focus, and you're really, you know, experimenting and analyzing and connecting the dots.
What do you think about night sweats?
That's quite common for women going through perimenopause and menopause. It's those hormone fluctuations that causes night sweats. Blood sugar imbalances could also cause night sweats. Alcohol consumption can also cause night sweats. So there are different things going on. You know, so you want to see, like, you know, what are the things that are in my control and out of my control? So, you know, with hormone dysregulation, a lot of times, you know, it's working with your physician on that and getting your hormones balanced. Your diet plays a lot into your hormone regulation as well. So making sure, you know, going back to our early conversation about a nutrient-dense whole food diet, you know, really balanced is going to be really important to your hormones, not having a lot of chemicals in your body that it doesn't recognize. You know, keeping the temperature low. They have like cooling, you know, pads and mattresses. You know, what are you wearing to sleep? Do you have a fan in your room? You know, there's just so many different things you could try to help with that.
So when it comes to certain foods, and you know, the approach is to have a well-balanced whole foods diet you would recommend, but what are some foods that you know in the top of your head that would absolutely affect our sleep right off the bat?
Well, the liquid foods like caffeine and alcohol, we talked about that. Chocolate has caffeine in it that could impact your sleep. You know, having foods that have a lot of additives and chemicals, if you read a label and it doesn't grow on a farm or in nature in any way, those are things that could cause a stress response in your body, can cause inflammation in your body, can cause gut issues for you, could cause food sensitivities. So that's why healthy foods, that some people have food sensitivities to. You know, for me, you know, I have inflammatory bowel disease, and there are certain foods that my body reacts to that are like vegetables that other people would find to be, you know, a very healthy alternative. So it's really, again, an N equals one type of situation. But I think to minimize processed foods, you know, is important. And it's also, you know, just the toxic load in your environment, you know, period. You know, some people might have a black mold issue in their house that could be causing them sleep issues. And those are much harder to, you know, kind of figure out, and usually require some type of professional to come in and check it out. Because there's other symptoms and things that go with those things that would point you in that direction.
Also, when going back to nutrition, sugar.
You know, if you can cut out added sugar in your life, you're just going to be better off overall. It's not doing you any favors. When you have, say, fruit, for instance, like if I eat a banana straight up, my blood sugar will go through the roof. I don't even have to test it.
I found when I ate bananas probably about a couple of hours before bed, I couldn't sleep.
I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, if you had a continuous glucose monitor and you could like see all day long, like how different foods are impacting you, you know, one person might find out a banana doesn't increase my blood sugar at all. And then another would be like, you know, it puts you like right through the roof. So one, you know, ways to combat that is to couple that with protein and fat. So, you know, don't eat, you know, eating fruit on an empty stomach, unless, you know, berries and things like that are lower in sugar, like have some nut, like a few nuts with your banana, or some nut butter with your banana, you know, something that's going to slow down that sugar into your blood. So that's why having your carbs with proteins and fat all together is, you know, wise idea when it comes to blood sugar. Things that have a high glycemic index, you know, you can go online and there's lists of what those things are, but it's usually pasta, white rice, bread, white bread, you know, things that don't have a lot of fiber in them to like slow down that blood sugar. One of the other problems with processed food, even ketchup. I mean, if you just get a bottle of like Heinz ketchup, you're going to see high fructose corn syrup as like one of the first ingredients. And high fructose corn syrup, that metabolizes in your liver and can cause fatty liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and also mess with your blood sugar. You know, even getting ketchup with regular sugar is better. I use a lot of Primal Kitchen products, and they are very natural, low sugar alternatives. Sometimes you have to retrain your taste buds, because if you're like very used to highly palatable sweet foods, and then you're trying to switch to more, you know, lower sugar, more natural whole foods, sometimes it takes a little time for your taste buds to adjust to that.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for coming on the show. Where can we find you?
So at my website, amandachocko.com, Amanda, and then C-H-O-C-K-O. On there, you can find my book. You could see my sleep coaching programs. I also have a free resource on there on how to create your perfect wind down routine that you could download to start getting you on that road to good sleep. And then also I give sleep tips on my Instagram, and that's at amanda.chocko.
I really appreciate your knowledge and your insights and practical tips for our viewers as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun.